Welcome to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast with Jacob Ayers, providing actionable content to help you along your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. As the premier asset class, real estate has helped ordinary people just like you amass fortunes. The benefits of passive income from real estate investing will allow you to live a life you want. And now, your host, entrepreneur, real estate investor, and apartment deal syndicator, Jacob Ayers.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast, episode 79. I'm your host, Jacob Ayers. Thanks so much for tuning in to yet another episode. Today, our guest is Kevin Bupp. Kevin is a Florida-based real estate investor and serial entrepreneur with over $40 million of real estate transactions. His extensive investment experience spans the gamut of apartment buildings, single-family homes, office buildings, raw land, condos, and his favorite and by far the most profitable, mobile home parks. Kevin holds the keys to successful real estate investing. With over 16 years of experience, Kevin now educates investors to locate, acquire, and create higher than average returns from this widely misunderstood niche of mobile home park investing. He shares his expertise through Mobile Home Academy and is also the host of the Investing for Cashflow podcast. In addition to his real estate endeavors, Kevin is passionate about giving back and is the founder of several charitable organizations, including founder of runningforbrews.com, a social running club with more than 10,000 active members, and 72 Hours to Key West, an annual 280-mile bike ride benefiting impoverished families during the holidays. Without further ado, let's jump into the episode. All right, today I welcome on the show Kevin Bupp. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jacob. I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, yeah, it's our pleasure, Kevin. So, Kevin, could you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and how you got started investing in real estate?
Sure. I'll try to give you the condensed version. I'll go back in time a little bit, back to when I was 18 years old. I just graduated high school, Jacob, and I wasn't all that great of a student in high school and didn't really know what I wanted to do after graduating. And just so instead of wasting my parents' money and going away to a university and partying and dropping out the first year, I figured I'd go to community college and just be a good boy until I figured out what I wanted to do with life. So I did that, and I was attending bar part-time as I was going, you know, taking full-time classes, and was luckily introduced to a gentleman that later became a mentor to me. He was a local real estate investor, and he was about 20 years older than I. I had no interest in real estate at the time, didn't know anything about it, had never read a book on real estate, and had never even crossed my mind as an opportunity or a potential business that I should be looking at as far as what do I want to be when I grow up. But in any event, long story short, I got to know David, that's his name. I got to know him quite well. He invited me down to a boot camp in Philadelphia that was happening. And he said, hey, I've got an extra ticket. You know, if you have an interest in coming to see what it is I do, I'd love you to join me. You know, we kind of became friends. And so I said, yeah, I'll join you. What do I have to lose? Again, didn't really know what I was getting myself into. Still didn't really fully understand David's business. And he was in the single family space. He also had some smaller multifamily rentals. And that was his life. I mean, that was his career. He dressed really nice. He drove a really nice car and was really well put together. And he had done all that through real estate investing. And so I went to this boot camp that was put on by Ron LeGrand, who is still an educator out there in space today. I don't know, guy, he's got to be in the 70s now. He's been teaching for a long time. And this boot camp was really to teach us how to fix and flip homes, which he was already doing, but he was a student of education. David was. And so he was always attending these types of educational events and boot camps and such. And so, Jacob, I went to this with really just an open mind, not knowing what I was going to find out when I got there, what I was going to learn. And, you know, probably 2 days into this 3-day event, it was exciting. There was a lot of energy in the room, and I was meeting people that I didn't feel were any smarter than I was, that were making a lot of money buying single family homes and flipping them, or some of them that were buying single family homes, renovating them and keeping them for cash flow, which I didn't even know cash flow was never even a word in my vocabulary at that point in time. And that's what David's model was all about. He bought rentals and he renovated them, but he kept them for cash flow. And so I left that boot camp with a new vision, a vision of this is something I can grab a hold of. This is something that I can pour my energy into. At that point, again, I was kind of like a wavering 19-year-old with no direction whatsoever in life. And this was something that I felt that I could grasp. And again, I felt that I was smart enough based on the other individuals I met there at that event, that it was something that I was smart enough that I could learn and that I could make money with. And really at that point in my life, it was all about how do I make money, right? It was like, how do I make the most money fastest, right? And how do I build this lifestyle that I saw David living, you know, a really nice car, not really having to work on a set schedule, really being his own boss. Again, I didn't really know what all that meant. All I knew is that it looked pretty cool. And I basically went to David still after this event, not knowing really how to do all this, teach you this in event, but it's like a fire hose. It was 3 days of learning with, and I went into it not knowing anything about this business. So like it was just being fed with a fire hose and I was overwhelmed. And so I went to David and essentially asked him if he would mind taking me underneath his wing. And essentially I said, I will do anything you ask. I will, you know, be at your home office. I will be with you on site at properties. I will do the paperwork. I will do the grunt work. I'll do whatever you need help with and give you and your business value if you'll agree to help me out. We didn't really define exactly what that meant. And it just kind of morphed into a role where I essentially was underneath his wing. I mean, I was around him every minute, every second that I wasn't either at community college or tending bar, which my bar job typically had me in the evening time, you know, like 5 till midnight. And so during the day, if I wasn't at classes, I was at David's house or I was with him on an appointment. I was meeting with a bank. I was meeting with a contractor, create new leases and get them out to his tenants for renewals, whatever it might be. So I followed him around essentially for a year, helping him out, doing anything that he needed help with before I finally felt comfortable enough to step out on my own and do my very first deal, which was a really rundown, beat up single family row home in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It was in a very bad part of town, a part of town that I probably still wouldn't want to go into today. And bought that first property, renovated it with his help. You know, he had a lot of resources that I had now had access to, private money resource that helped me get the funding lined up. Not a good bit, but enough about renovations now, had being around his crews and some of the renovations he had done to feel comfortable about diving into a renovation project at that point in time. So bought my first property at the age of 20, moved on from there and invested in a lot more single family homes, started buying apartment buildings a couple years down the road. And for the past 5 years, just to kind of, you know, bring up the speed where we're at today, for the past 5 years have been solely focused on the niche of mobile home parks. And so I've kind of gone through different transitions throughout the years. During my real estate endeavors, I've also started a few other entrepreneurial ventures aside from real estate, but real estate has always been my core, Jacob. And I've always liked to stay focused on one particular type of investment at a time. And it just, again, so happens that for the past 5 years, which I think I'm going to be in love with mobile home parks for a long time. This isn't going to be like a temporary dating stage. This is going to be a long-term play for us. And so past 5 years, mobile home parks, and I can definitely foresee the next at least 10 or 15 years being in this space as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, Kevin. Well, hey, let's back up and talk about that very first deal. How important, Kevin, would you say that deal was to you? I mean, maybe it wasn't like so impactful at the time in terms of like cash flow or appreciation today, but in terms of the mentality of getting started, could you talk about what that deal did for you?
Yeah, it scared the crap out of me is what it did. it really did. I didn't have a lot of money in savings. I did pretty well bartending, you know, a couple nights a week. And so I had a good bit of cash saved up, but it was all I had. I mean, I didn't come from a wealthy family, so I didn't have like family money willing to like support me or anything like that. So it was my own money. I had just really built credit at that point in my life. You know, I had a couple credit cards that I was strategically trying to build up a credit score with. And so it was something that I viewed as an opportunity, but also something that could literally destroy at that point in my life, everything I'd worked for, which now I look back wasn't that much, but to me it was everything. And so it was scary, but exciting at the same time. It took a number of months to go through renovations. There was lots of learning, lots of challenges, lots of roadblocks. David helped me through a lot of that. But really, I can't tell you that I really felt comfortable until the day came where I actually got a tenant in place in that property, which was probably about 5 months down the road because it was a pretty big renovation project. That was the point in time where I felt like I'd kind of conquered that fear a little bit. And I knew that I could replicate that process. Like I knew the feelings now, right? I knew like the fear going into it. I knew the fear during the, you know, the renovation stage, not knowing, am I going to be able to find a tenant for what I projected I was going to be able to rent this place for? And how fast would that happen? And would they be a good tenant? Would they stay a while? You know, I had all these trepidations through that initial process. But once I got that tenant in place, a lot of those fears went away and it felt very rewarding. And I felt like I did this, right? I made this happen. This is what David's done. He's done it in a much bigger way, but this is my first one. I think I can do this again. Let's make it happen. So it was a point in time where I felt like literally I'd run through the ribbon, right? It was like, it wasn't really the finish line of life, but it was a finish line of that first deal. Like I had won the race on this first deal. Now let's go run some other races.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure so many people out there, Kevin, can relate to that time when, like, you know, they've bought their first property, they've got those butterflies and those trepidations and those like negative thoughts in their mind. And then getting that first tenant in there and having like that aha proof of concept moment, like, okay, this works.
That's it.
This is a thing. Let's just do it again and again and let's see where it takes us. So yeah, awesome stuff. Well, Kevin, how have you transitioned into mobile home parks and why mobile home parks? I mean, they kind of have a bit of a negative stigma, I would say. And now, can you talk us through how you landed on that kind of niche investment class?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Jacob. So what had happened is, as I'd mentioned, I had bought a number of single family homes for many years, apartment buildings as well, and a few other miscellaneous types of real estate along the way. And then 2007, 2008 came, and that hurt really bad. Like, that was a very challenging time for our business, went through a lot of struggles with our existing portfolio that we had built up over the years, and had a really challenging time for, you know, a good 3 years. During that challenging time, I kind of stepped away from real estate and didn't really want to have anything to do with it for a number of years. Just, it was probably the worst I'd ever experienced in life. I mean, it was really the first downturn I'd ever been through, and I didn't really know how to handle it properly. And so the only thing I knew to do was really either stick my head in the sand, which I did for a little bit of time, but or focus on some other business opportunities that were aside from real estate. So there was like a 3-year hiatus where I went in and started a few other businesses that were health and fitness related, which was really important in my life at that time. But then, you know, there was always this burning desire deep in me that just wouldn't go away, as far as like, I need to get back into this real estate game. It's what I love. It's what I enjoy. It's what had become my passion. It's what really, I guess, gave me proof of concept, as you'd like to put it, as being like an adult. Like I've kind of grown up, right? Like, this is me. This is my identity. And so I started looking at that point in time back at my business, what worked and what didn't work. And what I realized is that, number one, the single family home space, which we had a pretty big portfolio, that's the part that really didn't, it's not that it doesn't work for everybody. For me, it wasn't a viable strategy moving forward as far as like rebuilding an empire, like rebuilding this cash flow that I was so accustomed to. The multifamily side of our business was good. It worked really well. Those properties took much less effort as far as scalability, as far as overall just being time consuming. They took a lot less effort to run and provided very stabilized cash flow and just more efficiencies overall. And so I knew moving forward that I wanted to buy multifamily. I didn't want to spend my time on the single family home space. I wanted to focus on multifamily. So I went out there kind of on a journey for about a year, just talking to everyone I could that was either still in the multifamily home space that had made it through the downturn, or even the new guys that had kind of jumped in, like that became investors after the crash of 2008, to find out what the landscape looked like, to find out what they were doing in their business, what was working for them. Because you got to remember, back in like 2011, 2012, there was still a lot of stress in the marketplace. There was still a ton of distress out there. The lending world had changed in a big way. And so I was just really trying to re-educate myself from that 3-year hiatus, you know, re-educate myself as to what things really looked like and what was my business going to look like moving forward. And so during that time, I was introduced to a gentleman, name of Randy Kilgore, who had been in the mobile home park space for 30 years, but on the financing side. So that was his adult career, was in the financing side of the manufactured housing space. So he, I forget how much he had lent, but somewhere in the billions of dollars range as far as like loans actually originated for mobile home communities. And after he retired, which was when I met him, he'd already been retired for a number of years. He started buying communities here in Florida. He had purchased a few communities already and had lunch with him, and just piqued my interest in many different ways. I didn't really have an interest at the point of time meeting with him that I was going to be buying parks. I said, you know, let's go meet with this guy. Let's see what it was all about. And spent about 2 hours with him, and he piqued my interest in so many different ways when he started comparing like why mobile home parks versus apartment buildings. Like, he wasn't really putting down like apartment buildings. He was just saying, you should open your mind up to mobile home parks because they're very unique in many different ways and offer a lot of value that you might not find in investing in multifamily properties. And so I left that meeting basically saying, like, I'm going to give this thing a year. I'm going to give it a year to find a community, buy a community, and try to prove this concept. And so that was really the start of it. Bought our first community. And at that point, decided at that point moving forward that that's what we were going to do. We were going to focus on mobile home parks because it seemed like an awesome niche. It seemed like there was a lot of opportunity there, a lot of growth potential. And I do really well focused. So like, instead of chasing that shiny object and saying, hey, we're going to be buying apartment buildings, we're going to buy mobile home parks, we're going to buy self-storage, like, I knew that we had to put a focus into it. And that's what's brought us to where we are today.
Yeah, Kevin, really good. So what did Randy kind of open your eyes to in terms of the benefits of this asset class? Was it, you know, the tenant base? Was it the stability? Was it the entry points? You know, what are some of the pros and cons of the mobile home parks over, you know, your Class C, Class B apartment buildings?
Yeah, so many different things. Number one, tenant turnover. You know, if an apartment building, really, if you got a tenant that's ready to go, and even if their lease isn't up, they're ready to rock and roll and just move out and head on to somewhere else, they can literally put the mattress on the roof of their car. They can, you know, put their clothes in a backpack or in a trash bag, and they can roll out in the middle of the night. They can leave at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
There's not much attachment there. Whereas in a mobile home community, they, for the most part, they own the homes. Okay. And so these are structures that they are mobile, because they can be moved, but it's very expensive to move them, and it costs money to move them, a lot of money. I mean, you're talking for a single wide to actually move it and reset it in another community, you're talking $5,000 to $7,000. For a double wide, you're looking probably $10,000 or more. It's very hard and challenging for someone just to get up and exit out and move on. And so the tenant turnover is very, very low in a mobile home community compared to an apartment complex. And so what typically happens in a mobile home park is if they want to move, they sell their home to someone else that then moves into that home and continues paying us lot rent, right? And so the cycle very rarely ever gets interrupted if the resident owns the home. And so tenant turnover, even if it does happen, you really don't have a hiccup in your income, because typically they have to sell the home before they can move on. They sell it to someone else that moves in and starts paying lot rent. So that's one of the things that really piqued my interest. Another was the ease of overall management of these properties. So when you start comparing mobile home parks to apartment buildings, you're basically, you know, being the management, you're in charge of the toilets, the plumbing, the roof, the AC, anything that goes on, it's your responsibility, you know, to actually handle those maintenance issues. Whereas in a mobile home park, our responsibility is the actual just infrastructure of the community. So the water lines, the sewer lines, the roads, the common areas. But as far as the home itself is concerned, or the mobile home is concerned, their roof, their plumbing, their AC, any of that breaks, they are calling the plumber, the AC man directly. They're not calling us in the middle of the night. And so it's a lot less maintenance intensive when you compare it to an apartment building. And then there's many other points, but I'll mention one other one that we've seen as a big benefit is the overall returns. And so it's hard to compare apples to apples, but if you could truly say that, you know, a C-class apartment building in one market, a C-grade mobile home park in that same market, both are about the same size, we would expect, based on today's buying parameters, we would expect to achieve at minimum a 2-point yield spread as far as returns are concerned on what we're buying that mobile home park at versus what the comparable apartment building might sell for. So typically, it's even higher than 2 points. So if you're talking an apartment complex that in today's world would sell in a 6 cap, we would expect to buy a similar size mobile home park of a similar quality at an 8 cap or higher. And a lot of times, it's more than 2 points. A lot of times, we're looking at 9 or 10 caps even. So the returns are substantially higher. Again, a lot of that goes down to how you buy. Anything can give you a great return if you purchase it right. And we just see that there's a lot of opportunity in the mobile home park space based on the current ownership that's out there to where we can buy these things at the right price, at the right cap rate, that have a lot of upside and a lot of meat left on the bone that we can realize by operating them correctly. So many other things there, but those are just some of the top ones that come to mind of why we like parks compared to apartments. And those items are the things that Randy, additional to other things as well, that he really spoke to me about at that lunch meeting.
Yeah, well, one point, Kevin, you made there that I want to emphasize on is when you're buying these parks, oftentimes you're not buying the mobile homes themselves. You're just buying the lots, the infrastructure, the pavement, the roads, the land. So that's a really distinguishing point in versus other asset classes.
Yeah, for the most part, I will tell you that we do own a good number of mobile homes, Jacob, and that's only because there are certain parks out there that there is a percentage of the homes that might be owned by the community. And there's things that happen. You might have a resident that passes away that owned their own home, and maybe they don't have any heirs that want to come in and take that home over. And so you might end up with a trailer that you didn't expect getting. And so being the park owner, you know, if there's no one paying lot rent in that trailer, your goal is to get that revenue back. And so if that happens, one of our communities will go through what's called an abandoned title process, where we'll basically get a new title issued in our name. So now we own the trailer, we'll renovate it and turn around and sell it off, or turn it into a rent-to-own type program. You know, we'll do some kind of creative financing so that we can get someone in there that's paying us underlying rent or lot rent, or, you know, the two combined. So you'll see that happen sometimes in some communities, like it happens more than others. So, you know, there's been a few communities we've purchased that have come with 30 or 40 rental properties. Now, our goal when we get a community like that that actually has rental properties, you know, as part of its inventory is to turn them into a home that we are going to sell. So whether it be, again, on creative terms, like a rent to own, or even selling it for outright cash, because really what we want at the end of the day, our goal is to have them living in that home, to own that home to where they're just paying us lot rent. Because at once we get to that point, once they are just a straight lot renter, we do not have to ever again worry about their roof, their air conditioning, their plumbing, or anything else that happens. And then on top of that, we know that the turn rate of that individual is going to be much lower than if it was just a renter. And so our goal is to get them to a lot renter and owning that home as fast as possible. Because once that happens, we know that that revenue base there is much more stable than if it's just a renter per se that has a 12-month lease that can, just like in an apartment, can get up, pack their bags up, put the mattress on the roof, and leave at a moment's notice.
Yeah, okay. It makes perfect sense, Kevin. So thanks for clearing that up. Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, as mobile home parks kind of have this negative perception. So how have you managed that lower income tenant, maybe blue collar tenant type base of tenants that you see in these mobile home parks?
I'll crush that stereotype a little bit. And I know that it exists out there. And believe me, it still exists. And it exists for a reason, because there are lots of communities that aren't run properly. They attract the wrong tenant base. They're in the bad part of town. You know, they're essentially full of transient type individuals. Well, I'm going to crush that stereotype, because you can't paint a broad brushstroke across the entire asset class. Otherwise, if you do, you kind of have to do the same thing to apartment buildings, right? Because we all can agree that there's really nice high-end A-grade apartment buildings. But we also say on the other end of that spectrum, there's really rough D-class war zone, like you wouldn't go into it at the middle of the night, even if you had like a fully automatic weapon, right? Like you'd still be risking your life by doing that.
Yeah.
So the same thing applies to mobile home parks. Yeah, we've got the really rough, what we call trailer parks, right? They're like the transient motel crowds, like just full of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Like they're not attractive at all. You don't want to own it. I mean, at least us, that's not our business model. We don't want that type of tenant. You know, there's people out there that make money in that type of asset or that type of investment, just like there are guys that make money in the D-grade war zone apartments. That's not our tenant base. That's not our niche whatsoever. Now, the other end of the spectrum on our side, on the mobile home park side, there are A-class, beautiful lifestyle. We like to call them lifestyle communities that have palm tree lined streets, that have three swimming pools, they have full-time activities directors, and they've got homes in them that range in the, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 range, and they've got underlying lot rents that are $1,000 a month or more. Like there's a lot of those in Florida. There's a lot of those across the country. So there's very nice high-end communities to where there's a community right near where I live. It's owned by one of the larger REITs. I forget who owns it today, but I guarantee that a majority of the residents that live in that park, most of them are snowbirds, but they probably owned a stick-built home up north or somewhere else in the country, and this is now their retirement, right? They've kind of downgraded a little bit. They're moving into a community that's got a lot of activities, lots of other people their age, and so that's a choice, right? That was a choice by them to live there. It wasn't really forced upon them based on affordability, and so we like to kind of fall right in the middle of that spectrum. Like we are catering to an affordable crowd, but we're catering to an affordable crowd that likes to pay their bills on time, that likes to send their kids to the best schools, but maybe can't afford to live in a stick-built home in that particular market that they're in. And so we've got quality communities, quality residents, but still have that affordable aspect to them. And so we're kind of, you know, if you wanted to compare us to apartments, we're like right in that, probably that C, the C plus. And even we do have a few communities that definitely would fall in that B plus grade that are pretty darn high end, but we're always all about affordability. So like our main niche is affordability, but giving them a clean, safe, and quiet place to live and raise their families.
Yeah, good points, Kevin. Hey, Kevin, in today's day and age, there's a lot of focus on affordable housing, and it doesn't seem that there's a lot of new mobile home parks coming online or new mobile home parks being built. So what does that say for the future demand of these types of properties?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's another thing that Randy brought up during our conversation. And so you're right. So essentially in this asset class, it's the only asset class in real estate overall, whether you compare it to shopping centers, self-storage, single family homes, office buildings, assisted living. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's the only asset class that has a diminishing supply, meaning that there's more that go away or get shut down, get redeveloped every year than that are built. And so that creates a very large organic barrier to entry for us. So if we buy a mobile home park in a really good market that has a strong demand for affordable housing, we do not have to worry or lose sleep over a developer coming in and buying a 10-acre tract down the road and building a mobile home park and competing with us directly. So it's a beautiful thing. Now, I will tell you that it creates limitations for us as far as opportunities to purchase, but we're at a really good point in time where there are still a ton of opportunities out there. It's a very fragmented asset class. And so there's still a lot of mom and pops that own these that we can find good deals with. But over time, you're going to find that this niche is going to get more consolidated by professional operators like ourselves. And the opportunity to purchase great parks that have a lot of upside will keep going down and down and down. And so because new ones will not be built, new ones will not be coming online. So it's a great thing today. 10 years from now, it might not be such a great thing for those that are looking to get into the niche, but today there is a ton of opportunity out there waiting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kevin, to those who are maybe interested in looking at mobile home parks as an investment class they might want to pursue, what are some things they might look for, like park size, you know, park type, paved versus, you know, gravel, you know, entrances, you know, all those kinds of intricacies? What are some qualities and characteristics of a park one might consider getting started?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it relies on their comfortability as far as, you know, what kind of experience they have as investing in real estate or managing real estate, you know. So assuming that you've got someone that has a little bit of experience, maybe they've owned some single family rentals or maybe a small multifamily property or a few multifamily properties, I would say, first and foremost, one of the big things that you want to look for is that it's of a certain size, right? And so we look for, we base it on revenue and what does the park produce in revenue and can we afford to have a quality on-site manager that handles the day-to-day operations? So you kind of get what you pay for as far as the manager is concerned. And we found that the kind of the minimum, and there's some exceptions to the rule, but kind of the minimum is somewhere in like the 40 space range, you know, so 40 lots in a average type of market with average lot rents, you should be able to hire and pay a good quality on-site manager to run that property for you. So I would say that I would start looking at parks of 40 spaces or larger. Now, again, exceptions to the rule, we do own a community that's even smaller than that, but it's in a market that has higher than normal lot rents. And so it create that park 35 spaces creates as much revenue as a park that in most markets would be a 50 space park as far as the annual revenue is concerned. And so we can afford to pay a good high quality on-site manager in that community, even though it is 35 spaces. And so that's not saying you can't make money with smaller parks, that they're not worth looking at, because they surely they can be depending on what you're willing to pay for them and what market that they're in. But that'd be a good rule of thumb to use. So 40 spaces are larger. As far as, you know, gravel roads versus paved roads, we do have one community that's on gravel roads. And I will say that you don't have to stay away from it, but just know that, you know, there are some downsides that come with gravel roads. One might be financing. You know, a lot of banks don't like gravel roads. Okay. So you might have a challenge getting financing. And it's also with the exit, you know, the exit on the backside. You've always got to think about your exit before you get into something. And so if you've got some trepidations with a gravel road, will your end buyer, if you decide to sell this community, will they have trepidations with a gravel road? And will they have challenges getting financing if you had it on the front end, you know, as far as the acquisition's concerned? And so also on top of that, gravel roads, if a resident has the opportunity to live in a park next door, yours, it has asphalt roads, yours has gravel roads, you're probably not going to get as much lot rent, right? You're probably going to have to step it down a little bit as far as your lot rent's concerned if they have some another choice right in town, same quality overall, but yours has gravel roads, theirs has asphalt, because gravel creates dust, cars are always slightly dirty, you know, it's just, it's not as attractive overall. So, I mean, there's pros and cons of it, but it doesn't really bother us too much. I wouldn't say that we seek out gravel roads by any means, but it's definitely not something that steers us the opposite direction if a park that we're looking at has gravel roads. And you can always pave them as well, you know, so if you buy it at the right price, you could always factor into your future budget a budget for paving. And so the one community that we do own, Jacob, is it's actually a really nice community, it's in a great market. There is the possibility that we might pave that park sometime in the future, and because it's got really nice homes in it, it's in a great location, and we would be able to more than likely get our money back as far as the sales concerned if we pave those roads. So it's a consideration.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting point, Kevin. In terms of looking at these asset classes, what kind of value add opportunities exist, you know, when you're just buying, you know, essentially land, infrastructure, roads, sewer systems, things, what kind of value add opportunities can you do to an asset like that?
Yeah. So the lowest of the hanging fruits would be rental increases. So it's quite common that when we purchase communities, especially if they're run by mom and pops, a lot of them haven't, you know, the mom and pop operators haven't kept up with market trends. They haven't kept up with maintaining what the market bears as far as rents are concerned. And so that's very low hanging fruit, because every dollar that we raise rents, if we go into a park and the lot rents are currently at 200, but the market's at 300, every dollar we raise that rent goes directly to our bottom line. So that's very low hanging fruit. Yeah. And that's quite common upside. Some additional upside would be, you know, lots of parks we've purchased that have come with some vacant park owned homes. And so we talked about the park owning some of the trailers. Well, it's quite common that we'll see that the owner has acquired some trailers over time. Maybe they were abandoned. Maybe they even bought the trailers from the residents that were moving, but maybe they're sitting there vacant. They haven't turned them, because that's a process in itself, right? Doing renovations and getting these things ready again for occupancy. And so in that situation, we'll go in and we'll renovate them right away, turn around and either sell them or do a rent to own on them. And so that's a lot of good upside there. That happens quite often. You'll find parks that have empty lots to where the infrastructure is there, There's a water, there's a sewer hookup, there's electric, but there's no trailer on that lot. Maybe there was at some point, but there's not today. So there's infill opportunities as well, where you can go out and buy used homes, bring them in, sell them or rent them, or even bring in new homes and create a new home use or new home sales program for those empty infill lots. So another big thing is operational inefficiencies. It's quite common that we see mom and pops that just, they weren't really business people when they started the park. They don't do a great job of running it as efficient as possible. And so there's lots of times where we can actually lower the operational expenses associated with that property by running it more like a business, right? And a lot of those things come down to even collections. Like we'll see where there's rolling balances for months and months and months because the owners have become friends with the resident. They let Mary, you know, Mary had a dog that had a broken leg. And so they let her go without 3 months for paying so she could pay for surgery for her dog. And things like that happen. And they just kind of let it slide. And that builds up over time and it gets out of control. And so us having black and white operational policies, a lot of times we can fix those things pretty quickly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all makes really good sense. Well, Kevin, how are you finding these parks? Are they from, you know, mom and pop owners? Are they from professional operators like yourself? Or are they from like, you know, institutional money, you know, REITs, et cetera? What kind of owners are you seeing out there? And how are you finding and acquiring these deals?
All the above. I would tell you that I don't think we haven't purchased anything from an institutional investor per se. Majority of our parks we're buying from the mom and pop type of operators or smaller operators that maybe aren't mom and pop, but maybe own a handful of parks or slightly more than that, but still aren't considered institutional by any means. But we find most of our parks, I'd say the number one way we find them is direct. We do direct to owner marketing. Number one way is direct mail. We also do cold calling and we also work with brokers. I would say direct mail and brokers are our biggest two, with direct mail being the number one. We get the best results by going direct to owner, sending mail campaigns to them and trying to find our letter to land in their lap at a point in time when they have a motivation or have an interest in considering selling their property.
Yeah, okay. Well, Kevin, I've got to ask, when you're looking at these mom and pop owned parks, are there any opportunities for seller financing on these parks? Maybe they're an unsophisticated investor and are just going to take their money and, you know, put it in their, you know, savings account retire on it. Are there, that kind of maybe seems to be like, you know, what a, you know, unsophisticated investor, mom and pop type owner would do. Are there any opportunities for acquiring parks in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a number of the parks we own today that have owner finance notes in place. And a lot of it really does come down to understanding the objective of the seller. Like, what do they intend to do with that money if they should sell? And a lot of times, if you can dig into that and build a good rapport with them, you can find out. And if you realize that they were just going to stick it in their checking account or a savings account, then you can start opening up that conversation for owner financing. And you know, a lot of them haven't even met with their CPA. Like, they're considering selling their property. They've owned it for 30 years. Their tax basis is non-existent. And they haven't even realized that there's going to be a massive recapture as far as capital gains is concerned, recapture depreciation, and they're going to pay a big hefty bill to Uncle Sam. A lot of them haven't gone that far. They haven't met with an account in their CPA to find out what's going to happen when they sell this and what should they be doing with their money? How should they be structuring this? And so, yes, it's quite common. But again, a lot of it really comes down to just really understanding the objective of the seller and then showing them a solution. And a lot of times, really, owner financing can be that solution. And it really is in their best interest. And so it happens quite often for us. And there are certain times where maybe they don't necessarily have a plan for the money. I'll give you an example. Jacob, we just bought a community from the original family that had developed it. The father built it back, started back in the late 60s. He passed away probably about 20 years ago. There was four or five siblings that took this over. One of them kind of ran the park. The other four just kind of put their hands out and accepted cash flow each month from the property. But it got to the point in time where they were ready to sell, or he was ready to sell. The one guy, the brother that was running the show, he was ready to sell. And if it was up to him, if it was just his decision and all that money was coming to him, he probably would have been creative about the financing. He had allowed us to, you know, or he would have held debt for us. But all the other siblings wanted their money. They wanted cash out. They didn't care about the cash flow. So in that circumstance, we had to cater to what was in the best interest of the sellers, right? And so we got bank financing, cashed them out. And they all obviously had the opportunity at that point to go do whatever they wanted to do with their money. A lot of them paid big, hefty tax bills, but that's what the majority wanted. And that's what worked best for them. So every situation is a little different, but there are a lot of opportunities in this space from mom and pop owners that have owned for a long time that own these things free and clear to negotiate owner financing.
Yeah, well, regardless of the asset class, Kevin, you are, as a real estate investor, the problem solver. So going to that seller and, you know, figuring out what works for them, you know, how to solve their issues, you know, how to make the best deal for the both of you. It's really your job at the end of the day.
You're absolutely correct. Those that get paid the most money in this business, whether it's mobile home parks or apartment buildings or single family, you get paid the most money by becoming the best problem solver. That's it. You got it. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Jacob.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Kevin, are there any kind of rules of thumb you've found handy when analyzing these mobile home deals? You know, when you're looking at single family homes, everybody, you know, kind of operates off the 1% rent to value ratio. Are there any like, you know, generic rules of thumbs that you use in your analysis of these deals?
I like to kind of start and tell people that they have to learn what's their objective as an investor, right? And so when you look at a single family home deal, you kind of know what kind of return you want to get on your time maybe or on your money. And so like a lot of your formulas are built around that. Like us, we have a certain return that we want to hit on a deal as far as cash flow. Like we buy these things for cash flow. We don't buy them with the intent of fixing up and flipping them. We want to see real cash flow after expenses, you know, that goes into our pocket each and every year. And so we like to achieve, and this is us, this could be different than someone else, but like our goal is to achieve in the first year somewhere between like a 16 to 18% cash on cash return, if not higher, on our own leverage. So on levered debt, typically the levered debt's going to be somewhere between 25 and 30% down payment. We want to know that we can achieve that property a 16 to 18 and sometimes upwards of 20% or higher cash on cash annualized returns. That might be a little different for somebody else. Jacob, you might say, you know what, Kevin, you're crazy. Like that sounds insane that you would pass up a deal that gets you 12%. Like I'll buy 12%. And so your rule of thumb changes now of what you're willing to pay on the front end for something versus what mine looks like, right?
Yeah,
so
right. Okay.
I kind of like to back into it a little bit. I like to tell people to figure out what your goals are, your targets are as an investor, and then back into what makes sense for you. That way, you're not trying to align yourself with what I would buy. You're aligning yourself with what's going to help you achieve your investment goals.
Yeah, okay. Really good points. Well, Kevin, let's kind of switch gears here and talk about you personally and some of your personal investments. And could you give us a kind of an idea of some of your better and worst deals you've come across? Let's kind of tailor it towards the mobile home space.
Yeah, sure. Best and worst deals. I can't really give you any like worst deals because everything well, that we, yeah, I mean, it,
good.
yeah, I mean, we passed on a lot of things that just wouldn't make sense, but I can't tell you that we've bought anything to date that really hasn't made sense for us or hasn't made money for us. I'll give you an example of the first property that we purchased because it's very unique and it's a little different than probably what we'd purchase today, but it is a, for all reasons of the word, it's a home run. It was a park in Atlanta. It was a 35-space park, had 29 trailers in the park when we purchased it. Basically, it was 100% vacant. There were like three squatters that were living in these trailers, a couple of the trailers that hadn't paid rent in probably a year or more. This park had been vandalized. It was in a great area, but had been vandalized. All the AC units had been stolen. Roofs were leaking. Floors were rotted out. I mean, the homes were newer homes, but had been neglected for so many years. It had gone through foreclosure. It was in receivership. And in receivership, typically these management companies, they don't do a thing. I mean, they literally get paid management fees directed by the courts, but they don't spend a dime and they never even go see these communities. And so it just fell into deep disrepair. That community, we paid $200,000 for it. It did come with those 29 trailers that I was telling you about. It came with that and along with all the infrastructure. We put about $160,000 or $170,000 into the full renovations of every single one of those homes. It took us about a year to renovate and also get leased up this park to get it back to where it was stabilized. And today, that park, we just actually did a refi, got all of our cash back out of it, and then some, have still very low leverage debt in place. And that park just priced for just under $1 million. So the cash on cash return nowadays is infinite because we got all of our money back out of it. It's a small deal, but it's a solid performer. I mean, it's one that I probably wouldn't do again today because it doesn't fit our model as much because of the amount of time that we had negative cash flow. I mean, we had zero cash flow and basically for a year and we were dumping money into it, whereas that wouldn't work for our model today, but that was still a very good deal. It's a small deal. And I wanted to share that story because if you have any listeners that might consider a smaller deal, maybe they're limited on capital. Like maybe they can't go out and come up with a down payment for $1 million or $2 million property. But that deal there, if you're a single family home investor, you could probably figure out a way to scrape together the money or get a private investor involved to do a deal of that size, especially if you have renovation experience and you're comfortable doing a project of that nature. And that thing today, I think 2070. So looking at our P&Ls today, we're going to end up with an NOI in the neighborhood. I think about $130,000 of NOI on that property, which pretty strong.
Yeah, wow, that's really, really impressive.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, Kevin. Well, Kevin, I'm sure you haven't had this success on your own. So could you talk about the team you've built around you and how you've done so?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So there are three principals in our company today. It's myself and Charles D. Hart and Brian Spear. The three of us bring very unique qualities to the table. We know that there's a strategic advantage of what the three of us bring to the table. So I think the important thing about that is if you're whatever business you're in, assuming you're a real estate investor, but if you're whether you're in the single family home space or the apartment space and you're looking to grow as a company, and this doesn't mean you have to bring them in as partners, but if you're looking to hire employees or you're looking to bring people onto your team, trying to find people that have a complementary skill set to your own, you know, not to have the same skill set, but to have a complementary one to your own that are better at things that you're somewhat mediocre at, right? And, you know, find like whatever your one core competency is or your top two core competencies are and find others to fill in those voids. I can tell you that the three of us work really well together. We make it rain. We make magic happen.
I like it.
It's because we all bring something very unique. We know what that is. We're very aware of what each one brings to the table. We know what each one's weaknesses are and we work with that. And the same goes when we're going out hiring. You know, we just brought on a chief operating officer that brings about 17 years property management experience to our company. And she worked for one of the largest REIT in the manufactured housing space. And she was had a very high level operational role. And so her property management skill sets blow all of ours away. Even though we've all done it for a long time, she's done it. And more specifically, she's done it in our niche way longer and has a better feel for it. It's going to be a better fit than what we've been able to achieve on our own. We've done a really good job, but she's going to take it to the next level, right? And so we strategically hired her because of her background, because of her specialized experience in this particular niche. And she also works well with the team. I mean, we get along with her well, and it's going to be a good cohesive relationship moving forward.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it sounds like you've really headhunted a great team member there, and you're surrounding yourself with people who are almost even better than you in this industry, know
that's
something
it.
More, bring something that you don't have. So
I think that's the important part. Find someone that's better than you. Find someone that's equally as good, if not better than you are at a particular skill set, and hire that person, right? Hire up. It's kind of like, I'm not even going to use the comparison here, but I was going to say something, but it might not be appropriate. But anyway, hire up and find something that's better than you that can fill that void. Really, the whole goal, I think, as you're building out the company is to help take some of that operational stress off your shoulders, right? As you're an entrepreneur, like when you start off, you kind of try to wear all the hats, right? And, and as you're growing your company, you want to start bringing people in that can start taking a couple of those hats off your head and wear them and be proud of them and take it to another level so that you can relieve some of that stress and that load off your shoulders. And which at the end of the day is going to help you grow faster as a company because you can't do it all yourself. You've got to bring those team members, those partners in that can help you excel to that next level.
Yeah, awesome, Kevin. Well, hey, Kevin, what are your future goals with, acquiring more properties, growing your portfolio, and just investing in general?
You know, we really enjoy this business. And so I'm not going to speak to like monetary goals, like, oh, I can't wait till I can buy a yacht or something like this. So that's not really how my brain works. I really enjoy what I do. I don't wake up and say, oh gosh, I gotta go in today and grind away. Like I actually, you know, there's some challenging days, but I really enjoy it. And so looking at the industry as a whole, I'd mentioned that there's a lot of mom and pops we buy from. And what that means for us, as far as opportunities are concerned, at least in our eyes, is that there's a aging population of owners out there that are getting to the point to where there'd be health that is forcing them to sell, or maybe they're just tired and they're kind of like, they're ready, right? They've made a decision. I've owned this for 30 years. I want to sell. And that's a lot of the people we've purchased from over the years. That's who they are. And so there's a big opportunity over the next, we feel, 10 years, a big runway for us to take advantage of those opportunities, to buy from those owners that are aging out. And so really, we want to put forth all the efforts over the next couple of years to build our organization, to build our infrastructure. So where we can take down, if we want to take down 25 parks next year, Jacob, we can do it, and we can do it comfortably, and we can grow responsibly. If that's five, then we'll do five, right? And so we're buying what makes the most sense, what helps us hit our investment metrics. You know, we have certain investors we raise capital from. And so we've got a fiduciary responsibility to them to make sure that we're hitting their returns, that we're, you know, giving them the return on investment that they've signed up for. And, you know, they're our strategic partners. And so we're looking to take care of their investments as if they were our own. And so I don't know if that really answers your question, but we're excited about this business. We're excited about what it has to offer over the coming years. And honestly, on the flip side of that, we feel like it's a really rewarding business to be in as far as offering affordable housing to those that choose to send their kids to the good schools, that don't want to live in an apartment complex. They don't want to live in that C- or D-grade apartment complex, but yet they want to send their kids to the good schools. They want to have a little yard to play in. They want a place of their own. And so we give those that might not have the ability to live the American dream and be a homeowner, we give them the opportunity to do that. That's quite rewarding in itself. And that's something that we found in this space that it never existed in when I owned multifamily properties or even single family homes, right? Like, so we get to help those that are in a lower income demographic realize that dream of home ownership. And that's pretty rewarding in itself.
Yeah, that's awesome, Kevin. Having those goals like that, you know, kind of keeps you going. You don't feel like you're slugging through the day when you've got something to look forward to and, you know, kind of a reason why almost. So,
We're changing lives. I mean, we really are. We are changing lives and we're giving an opportunity to someone that didn't realize that opportunity even existed. I mean, that rings true in a lot of our communities. We've got, again, it's affordable housing. And so you've got folks in there that probably where they lived prior to that mobile home park was a lower end apartment, right? And we're trying to reach others that are out there that are living in the apartments that they don't even realize there's an opportunity to raise their kids and own their own home in a community that, you know, their neighbors are not just going to live there for 12 months, they're going to live there for 12 years, right? And so there's a sense of community there and they can become part of something bigger. So that's really exciting and rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, awesome, Kevin. Well, hey, as we're wrapping up here, Kevin, we've got a lightning round, just a series of questions we'd like to shoot at you and you just answer from the hip. How does that sound?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, great. Our first question is, what was your biggest hurdle getting started investing in real estate and how'd you overcome it?
You know, I think just, I guess I'm kind of a unique case in that I didn't find real estate found me. But once I realized that real estate was the path I was going to take, you know, that's when I told you, I asked David if he would take me under his wing, if he'd mentor me in this process. So I think just finding a mentor, a quality mentor that I could add value to, but in exchange for that, that I would get value from. So I think that for me, obviously, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. I don't know what I'd be doing. I could still be bartending. I don't know. if I wouldn't have met David, you know, if he wasn't brought into my life.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Well, Kevin, do you have a personal habit that contributes to your success?
I think exercise is a big one for me. I mean, I have a lot of them, but health and fitness is, you know, keeping a very balanced lifestyle as far as eating habits and as exercise habits as well. And you know, I can't tell you that I go out and exercise every morning. I don't have that consistent of a routine, but I can tell you that it is a part of my weekly routine. It's a part of my lifestyle and it helps in a huge way as far as, you know, mental focus, stamina and everything else. And I mean, that all plays into running a successful business. So I'd say health and fitness are the big ones for me.
Okay, great. Well, Kevin, do you have an online resource that you find valuable?
Online resource. That's a good one. You know, I was asked that question a couple times over the past month, and this one really caters to credit scores. Someone turned me on to the Credit Karma app on my phone. So I don't know if it's really a real estate resource, but it's pretty darn neat. I'm a big proponent of, you know, keeping track of your credit score and actually not just keeping track of it, but understanding what types of items have derogatory effects on your credit. So even if you pay your bills on time, running certain balances on your credit cards, if you don't pay attention to when they're getting reported to the credit bureaus each month, and maybe you're not paying them to where once it gets reported, it's not showing zero. It's actually showing that you still have a balance and that could bring your score down. And so Credit Karma allows me to get, number one, alerts when there's new credit inquiries, but number two, keep a very tight focus on when my different creditors are actually reporting to the bureaus and making sure that I can keep a schedule of getting my bills paid, not necessarily just on time, but actually on the right date so that whenever they get reported, it shows zero balances like credit cards and things like that nature.
Yeah.
So
okay,
that one's it's a slick app. Yeah, it's a really good one.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Kevin, what book would you recommend to the listeners and why?
Yeah, I've got a lot of them. I would tell you that I'm looking at my bookshelf now, and I just got back from a real estate conference over the last couple of days. It's more like a large mastermind conference. And so there's a book that I read many years ago, and I haven't read it for a number of years, but it goes along with the mastermind concept, and it's called, and they play off the old book, you know, Think and Grow Rich, but this one's called Meet and Grow Rich. And it really pertains to the value of masterminds and getting around like-minded individuals that can have an outside perspective and can help you grow your business by seeing things in a different way, seeing things that you might not be seeing, helping you overcome challenges that they've already been through. So really getting yourself into a mastermind, whether it doesn't have to be a paid mastermind. It could just be you and a couple guys that are local investors in your area that meet once a week or once every 2 weeks for an hour, you know, at a time that help each other through challenges and adopt new strategies and such in your business. And so you're not just growing on your own, you're growing together.
Okay, great. That's Meet and Grow Rich. So we'll link that book in the show notes for our audience to find if they want to pick that up and
give it
a read.
I'll grab it here and see. So that one, it's actually Joe Vitale and Bill Hibbler, Hibbler, are the two authors.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, Kevin, last question. If you were to give advice to your 20-year-old self to get started investing in real estate, what would it be?
You know, my 20-year-old self was already investing in real estate. So I would say at that point in time, if I were speaking to my 20-year-old self, knowing what I know today, it would be probably look to get involved in multi-unit type properties or commercial real estate, something a little bit bigger than just single family. And there's nothing wrong with single family. And I know guys that can make a killing, right? They do hundreds of deals a year. But for me, the scalability aspect and the lifestyle that you can achieve, it can be achieved a lot faster with commercial real estate or multi-family properties versus single family properties. So I would tell myself, don't waste the time on buying these little row homes in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania that you're buying for like $18,000 or $20,000. Like think of the bigger game. Think of buying the 40-unit apartment building in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania versus buying 40 single family homes because it's going to take a lot less time to buy that one 40-unit property. And it's just going to be a much more efficient operational process as well to own that one 40-unit versus 40 individual units.
Yeah, good points. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, as we're wrapping up today, you've given us a ton of information and opened our eyes to almost a new asset class, and that is mobile home parks. You're actually no stranger to talking about this. You are the host of the Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow podcast, where that's a large focus of the show. So aside from that, where can our audience learn more about you if they want to connect with you or learn more about this?
Yeah. So, and I'll speak to the podcast because we actually have two podcasts. The one you just mentioned, Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow. We do, we have spoken about mobile home parks in there, but we typically, it's more commercial real estate specific. So, I mean, it could be many different asset types. So we cover all the different types of commercial real estate on that show. But we also do have a mobile home park podcast. It's called The Mobile Home Park Podcast. So you can just type that in or you can search it by name as well. My partner and myself, Charles DeHart and I do that. It's a weekly show. And all we talk about is mobile home parks. So if you actually have an interest in this niche or you think you might have an interest in this niche or don't even know, go listen. I think there's 80 plus episodes up there. Lots of very granular information that will determine whether or not it's something that you truly might want to dig a little deeper into if you go listen to that show. But as far as making contact with me, the best way to do that is through my personal website, kevinbupp.com, or my personal email is kevin@kevinbupp.com. So they can reach me either one of those places.
Okay. Thanks so much for that, Kevin. Well, as we're wrapping up here, is there any piece of advice you'd like to leave with our audience?
You know, I think it just really comes down to, and this is so simple, and I don't mean to have it be generic, Jacob, but just take action. And that can mean so many different things. That doesn't mean like go out and buy a property today. It could mean go out and make an offer on a property. It could mean go read the book I just mentioned to you, get to know the other real estate investors in your area. It could mean go sign up for a REIA group, right? You know, whatever part of your journey you're in, whether you're just getting started or maybe you already own 20 single family homes and you've been thinking about getting into mobile home parks or you've been thinking about buying your first multifamily property, well, then do it. Take the necessary steps to get out there and actually make that thought or that vision a reality. So that's what I would leave you with.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that, Kevin. Well, Kevin, it's been a great conversation today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Jacob, it's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for having me. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care, Kevin.
You too.
All right. That wraps up our interview today with Kevin Bupp. As a cash flow investor, Kevin has found an asset class that provides higher than average returns, stable cash flows with a diminishing supply and a steady demand. Kevin provided a ton of great content and has showed us why mobile home parks as an asset class should not be overlooked. If you have any questions about anything we discussed on the show, feel free to reach out to either myself or Kevin and we'd be happy to answer any questions we can. I've linked Kevin's contact information in the show notes along with all the resources we mentioned during the show. If you have any questions or comments or want to hear something or someone specific, reach out to me. You can contact me at www.jacobayers.com/contact or connect with me on social media. If you enjoyed today's episode, please let me know by leaving a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening on. Till next week, signing off, I'm your host, Jacob Ayers.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast, providing you actionable content to build your real estate empire. Nothing on this show should be considered specific, personal, or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, financial, or business professional for personal advice. The opinions of guests are their own. Information is not guaranteed. All investment strategies have a potential for profit or loss. The host is operating on behalf of the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom, LLC, exclusively.